Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of February, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And for those of you still stuck in your basement, tomorrow is, in fact, Valentine's Day.
Yes, let us not forget, it is tomorrow's Valentine's Day. You still have time to not be the chump. I won't say be the hero, but you have time to not be the chump. Okay, so large numbers of U.S. internet subscribers are using over 1 terabyte a month for the first time as the pandemic continues to boost home internet usage. The power user category continued to accelerate in fourth quarter of 2020, with 14.1% of subscribers now consuming over a terabyte of data per month, which is up 94% from 2019. What the industry is calling extreme power users, subscribers using over 2 terabytes per month, account for 2.2% of U.S.-based internet customers in just the fourth quarter of 2020. That's a 120% jump over the 1% of customers who passed that mark in third quarter of 2020. As is to be expected, consumers with unlimited data plans go through more data than those who are capped. On broadband networks with unlimited data, there are 30% more 2-terabyte power users than on networks that charge data overage fees. Specifically, 2.5% of users on unlimited networks hit the 2-terabyte mark compared to 1.9% on capped networks. The statistic, among others, shows that data caps and overage fees prevent broadband subscribers from using as much as they'd like. Average usage on unlimited services was 496.6 gigabytes compared to only 472.3 gigabytes on capped services. So about 500 versus about 470. Many people got a break from data caps in the early stages of the pandemic, but ISPs that temporarily lifted their caps started putting them back into place in mid-2020. Bandwidth usage growth defined by pandemic is distributed evenly across most users and not driven by outliers or extreme users. During the pandemic, we've seen cable companies Cox and MediaCom impose harsh limits on uploads. This has coincided with a large increase in people working and taking classes at home and using more upload-heavy applications. Video-heavy uses like online classes and meetings have strained many under-provisioned networks. There are usually older providers using lower-speed hardware, whereas newer providers with more modern hardware are in better shape. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, I don't know, here it is. How much data do you use per month? And your choices are over a terabyte, over a gigabyte, not much, no idea, who cares, it's free, and of course, others. So far, we have 14 votes in the poll. Over a gigabyte is up top with no idea, closing in behind. Far in the distance is not much, and nobody's done anything. Of course, if you said other, there we go. Now we have 15 votes. If you said other, we would love to have you go over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, and you'll see the forum, second forum down, is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 13 Feb 21. How much data do you use per month? And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I mean, most families, you know, nowadays, because of the school, and even if they're, you know, I know, you know, a number of families, you know, say with four kids, and they've got one that's in school and one's being homeschooled, and then they're switching off and on because of the different school rotation systems. So, yeah, they're using a lot of data, and we'd be really hosed right now if the faster internet service. Could you imagine doing this on dial-up?
No, thank you.
You want to talk about fatigue and frustration? I could almost bet you'd hear more cases of computers being thrown across the room, slammed down keyboards, and pounding on them because it's not fast enough.
Yep, absolutely right.
And I would bet the vast majority of people don't know how much data they're using because it's not made easily available on most internet services. You have to remember to go into your account. You can sometimes look on your device, but you got to add up all your devices. That's in your router.
But most of them don't care. All they care about is how fast is it.
Right.
You know, if it's taking more than 10 seconds, you know, they have a, you know, fit. Especially if they got super fast internet service. You know, this is just totally unacceptable. And I sit there and say, you know what? Go back to the old modem days. What do you mean? And they never, you know, because they've never had that. So, no reference point. So, you want to take people back, you know, go back to a system like that. And then you'd appreciate the dial-up, you know, the instant internet service that we have now a lot more.
Yep. I have to say, it turns out I used about 660 gig just in January.
Is that all?
Yeah. Yeah, it really was low.
Seriously, because the way you guys, you know, between you and rest of your family.
January was a very busy month, and I didn't do a lot of movie watching or television show watching or any of that stuff. So I had cable on a lot for various political things, but not anything that pulled down from Greenlight. But so I only used about 183 gig up and about 475 gig down, which makes a lot of sense because most of that was doing video conferencing stuff. And so I would send one stream up and get three or four streams down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And in deference to people who are not on fast internet, I was using only medium quality video, so that did it too.
Yeah, you're not producing the next big.
Nobody needs to see this
Academy
anyway.
Award. That's right. Winning film.
That's exactly right. But a lot of people are pushing that terabyte a month. Mm-hmm. Data cap because, like you said, the kids at home are in classes all day. So they're, you know, they're seeing 8, 9, 10, 20, 30 data streams at a time, video streams at a time. Plus, then they're playing games, then they're watching a movie, then they're whatever. And we're doing a lot more of that. And
plus, if you got work and you can do a lot of individuals, not only are they doing their kids at home, you know, the schooling and all that, but they're also working from home.
That's right.
Because a lot of companies have found that the folks can be even more productive, that they're getting a lot more done doing it from home. And if they can, what the heck? It saves them on heat, light, and everything else.
Yep. Yeah. It's a very... it's going to be a very interesting world that we're going to go back to when COVID is done. A lot of people are going to realize they don't need to be in an office. Especially, and a lot of companies are going to realize they don't need to pay for office space.
Yeah.
Especially some of the tech companies in Silicon Valley where real estate is so expensive have already started saying that.
Right.
I think the Twitter said that their employees don't have to come back if they don't need to.
Well, a lot of them can downsize, you know, if they had this huge building and all of a sudden have maybe just instead of having multiple floors, one floor and a big conference room where they can call people in or a big meeting room for maybe a monthly meeting to get their other sales reps or whatever in and do it. Otherwise, they're doing it on Zoom.
That's right.
And like I said, it's paying off, and they're not paying for that additional space. And statistics have proven that folks are far more effective as far as getting a lot more done than they would have maybe at work. Because, you know, they might stop and take a break and, you know, go talk to this friend or that friend. Whereas if they're at home, they want to quick get the work done, get it done, folks, because they got other things to do, like the kids and all that. So they're focused on getting that task done and staying on a routine.
Well, and my daughter who works from home, she does, her work is kind of piecemeal. Some days she has 5 or 6 things she has to do, and some days she has 1, and some days she has none until something comes in from one of their customers. So she can more easily handle her day. Nobody's paying, in Arizona, it was somewhere around $28 or $30 a square foot for just cubicle space, even so, right? And heat and light and the rent, parking, name it. Nobody pays any of that now. The company doesn't have to pay any of that for her.
And it's saving, even if the employees were paying for parking and all that other stuff, now all of a sudden they don't have to pay that. That's like giving your employees a raise. Because
exactly right.
Some of the folks that have to work downtown in that, you know, they're paying this monthly fee. Now, all of a sudden, that's like, I got this extra money. Because they're not paying it to dish out there and then going out for lunch and, you know, all this other stuff.
Yep. It's a big deal.
The fear was always that the business owner, the managers wouldn't be able to know if you got any work done.
Right.
Well, there's the people that are going to screw off are going to screw off at the job now anyway. Well, then, you know, in the office, they're still going to screw off.
Right.
And the people that are going to work are going to work. So you probably already know who the screw offs are, and you're already watching them, and you're already assigning them tasks that you can tell if they finished or not.
That's exactly right. Mm. Well, and that's what my daughter said. She had said she had a discussion with her boss who had been happy to keep her working because they all loved her, but they were worried about somebody, even though her work ethic is exceptional, they were still worried about it. How were they going to keep track? Yada, yada, yada. And she said, I had a meeting with my boss, and my boss said, you're working harder at home than you were before. She said,
exactly.
Then you're keeping track?
Yeah.
She said, well, it's obvious that the work is getting done.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a manager and you don't know whether people are getting their work done, you're a crappy manager.
Yeah.
Get out of the job. Get out of the job.
What happened, Carl? We lose you?
All right.
Okay, hold on.
We're going to go to the phones in just a moment. Having a little confusion here, but we're going to go to the phones in just a moment, and we'll be talking to Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. How are things down there?
Good. How are you?
Peachy. What's up?
Well, you're talking about how much data somebody uses, and first thing I wanted to tell you, just so you know, is I live alone. I use about 150 gigabytes per month.
Wow.
I've been trying, since you said the news story, I've been trying to log into my Spectrum account to check my data usage. You can only see your usage if you're on auto pay.
Oh.
And I don't like auto pay because I want to pay my bills when I pay my bills.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So I can't tell my usage unless I give them my bank information so they can grab their money automatically.
Nice.
That's really nice of them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have my own router, so I just go into my router and look.
Yeah.
So that's pretty easy. 150 gig a month. You're on the low end, my friend.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, but the real reason I'm calling is because I'm about to take my computer into a computer repair shop, along with my printer, because I'm at the point where I don't know what to do at this point. My printer has a strange problem. The printer itself works, but it only seems to be able to print images and not text. Like when I go into the hang on for a second here. Okay, when I go into the software for the printer and I select print a test page, the test page has both text and images on it, but it'll only print the images. If I go into, let's say, WordPad, and I type a text document, and then I hit print, the printer does spit out a piece of paper, but it's completely blank because it won't print text. However, it will print the images if there's an image that that is associated with it. However, one other thing I have to tell you, if I do go into WordPad and type a text message, and then instead of trying to print it directly, I hit copy and paste, and I paste it into the Paint program in Windows, the Paint program, and then I print it from the Paint program.
It prints.
It thinks it's an image, and it prints.
Now, have you installed and uninstalled the drivers for that printer?
First thing I did was uninstall the drivers and reinstall them, and it didn't help.
All right. One of the things you might want to try is go into Devices and Printers.
Okay.
And select your printer properties. I don't need to lead you to that, do I? You've probably been there about 15 times.
Do it in the sleep.
So go to your printer properties, go to the Advanced tab, and turn off Enable Advanced Printing Features.
Hmm.
And I'm try that.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm in Device Manager, and I'm in the Print Properties. And I have a box that has four tabs, General, Settings, Details, and Events, but I don't see an Advanced tab.
Not Device Manager, in the printers.
Right, Devices and Printers window. The devices.
For icon.
Okay, so in the
control
search
panel
box,
under printers.
Right.
Yeah.
In the search box on your computers, type Devices and Printers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll see an option for Devices and Printers. And if you right-click the icon of your printer and then click Printer Properties, you should have an Advanced tab on that one.
Okay, I'm looking at that right now. So I did what you said. I typed in the Devices and Printers. I found the printer. I'm clicking on the printer.
Right-click on the printer.
Okay.
Right-click on it and select Printer Properties from the drop-down.
Right.
Is there an Advanced tab there?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Under that, you should have Enable Advanced Printing Features and toggle that.
Okay.
Does the printer...
And then, of course, you got to save all the changes all the way out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, guess what? Enable Advanced Printing Features is checked, but it's grayed out, so I cannot uncheck it.
Well, that's interesting.
Are you logged in as an admin user?
No, as a matter of fact.
That's probably why.
Well, maybe. Let's see. Actually, the way I have this computer set up, I don't actually have to log in by typing a password or anything. I just turn on the computer and it comes up. So I think I might always be an administrator because I don't know if I don't have to select that. So I don't know if that means I'm the administrator or not.
Well, it's set to auto log in to that user. Whether that user is an admin or not is a different question.
Right.
So you check your user's control panel and see if the user you're logged in is an admin user.
Yeah, admin rights.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You do need to be an admin to do this. But that should solve your problem.
Okay. It's interesting that unchecking advanced makes basic work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So under advanced, you can't do basic things.
How advanced is it that you can't print text?
Yeah.
I don't understand what that's advanced about.
Does the printer have its own built-in test page, and does that work?
Again, it does, but it won't print the text.
That's odd. But
well,
anyway,
if the printer's own built-in test page doesn't work, then it's not your computer. It's the printer.
It probably is. But first, just make sure you can uncheck that advanced printing feature.
Yeah, that's still what I want to do first. But could you once again go through how to get that ungrayed so I can? It's not grayed out.
You need to be the administrator,
mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of ways to do that. The easiest way is if you can run the control panel as root as your administrator.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. And the easiest way to do that, and this is not something you should do regularly, okay? But you should be able to do this, is to open up an admin terminal, right? So you can, the command line, run command line as administrator.
Right.
And then type control.exe, and that'll bring up the control panel.
Okay.
As administrator.
Great.
It looks like you may also be able to open the Devices and Printers as administrator You double-click the same device as in printer's window. Double-click the printer. Instead of right-click on it, you double-click on it. Then go to properties, and then there's an open as administrator.
Oh, okay. Right under properties.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it will ask for your administrator password if you've set one.
Okay.
Which you probably should.
Yeah, if you have
administrator it. Should have passwords.
Absolutely.
Right, right. Okay, I'll give that a try.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. One thing. Okay, so first, Carl is doing it right. Okay, he's not running as administrator. That's good. But when you do need to run as administrator, the very few times you have to do that, you have to jump through a couple of hoops. And frankly, you should jump through those hoops.
Yeah.
You should never run as administrator as a regular thing. That should always be something you do oddly rather than normally. Okay.
Helps to turn it on.
Too bad you weren't trained on that.
No, really, I'm a trained professional on this. No, Steve happened to bring up another point, which I just want to go back to, though. Is, you know, with everybody doing stuff from home and that, like you say, a lot of places are wanting you to set up the auto pay and all that other stuff. And I got thinking about it because I had the same thing happen to me with a couple of my subscriptions. And it's like, you know, they send it to me and I look at when my membership is due. And like one of them was it May.
Yeah.
And they're bugging me now to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
We get some, my wife still gets some paper magazines and it's like that 6 months ahead of time. Your subscription is due to expire soon. You should renew now.
Yeah. So I'd have no problem with that. If, and only if they gave me some incentive to do it.
Right.
They don't offer a discount or anything else. So here they get your money ahead of time. It's not like they, you know, they're taking a couple bucks off or whatever, giving you this or that. And they've got your money ahead of time, 2-3 months, say, whatever. And they're making interest on that.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, no, I did. But more and more companies are trying to do that, you know, with you. Oh, sign up for auto pay and, you know, we'll take it out. But they're not giving you any incentive why you should do it. It's just they want their money sooner.
Yeah.
And they're not going to give you anything for it.
Yeah. If they take your money out every 11 months, then at some point they get a free year off of you.
Yeah.
You pay for an extra year. I only have one auto pay thing and it's paid through my bank.
Yeah.
I told my bank to auto pay this and then they pay the day before it's due.
Yeah.
And then, I don't have to worry about it anymore, but I still get dunned by that company for the same thing. Set up, you should set up auto pay. I already did, just not with you. Shut up.
Yeah, really.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are and continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Matt from Webster, New York on the line. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's up, you guys? I love the radio show, and I'm just going to have to touch on, like, three topics. Okay. I don't like talking on the radio, and I don't want to have an agenda. But I'm just going to say three things. I want to touch on a couple topics. Green light internet got Rochester Airport, facial recognition on Facebook, and the Jazz Fest. What's up with that?
Okay. In terms of green light, they have a made a deal with the airport, Greater Rochester International Airport, the ROC,
Okay.
To
ROC.
ROC.
Gotta love it, baby.
Gotta love it.
Love it.
The ROC to put green light, make it available for everybody at the airport.
They're pumping it up, man.
I think that's great. I forget how fast it's going to be. But the point is, what it does is it shows up how high tech a city Rochester is.
Yeah.
And as people go through, they see more and more of that, and that can only be great advertising for the entire city. I applaud them. It's quite a feather in Mark Murphy's cap, and I am very pleased to see that it happened.
Now there's a reason to go to the airport 4 hours early for check-in, because you can sit there and surf the internet.
Or to just hang out at the airport.
Yeah.
Then what was the second thing? Jazz Fest.
The facial recognition on Facebook.
Oh yeah, well they've been doing that for a very long time. That's the whole point behind all those. What did you look like when you were 10, and what do you look like now? That's all just data that they're gathering for their own uses and to sell to law enforcement. That's what all of that is about.
And before that, it was the Google, and still now, the Google captures. You know, click all the taxis, click all the fire hydrants. They're training their algorithms to learn what objects are.
Right, and so the in terms of the Facebook thing, they want to be able to train their facial recognition software. They're paid by facial recognition companies to train their software so that they get better at recognizing people's faces. And that if
now hold on, Nick. I got to ask you a question. I took a DNA test. All my family come up on that, and I was like, oh my god, I freaked my balls off, dude.
Law enforcement are using companies like 23andMe and what's the other, Ancestry.com. They're using those DNA libraries to find matches for open cases, and they're finding familial matches. So this person's uncle, you know, did this crime, and we'll find him.
Right. Also, you want to be aware. You want to take a very close look at the fine print on those things. With many of them, they then own your DNA.
Well, Nick, could you explain to me the NLICER using agreement to me?
Well, I can't explain the whole thing because I will not do it, so I've never read the end user license agreement myself. But I do know that with many of them, what they do is they have a section that says that they now own the copyright to your DNA. So if it turns out that your DNA is useful for something, nobody has to pay you for it. They have to pay them for it. As for the Jazz Fest, I don't know all the details, but I do know that it's going to happen on the RIT campus this year in an attempt to both have a Jazz Fest and keep it pandemic friendly, I guess is the right way to put that. But I think that, you know, the fact that they're going to have one is a great thing, because it's great for Rochester and it's great for jazz enthusiasts. And I, for one, am delighted to see that they're trying to make it. It may not be the best way to do it. I'm not going to argue if it's the best way, but they are trying something, and I fully, fully commend them for that.
I liked the joke tweet after that about that the Lilac Festival is going to be held at the Medley Center this year.
Yeah. It's on there. All right, but thanks, Matt.
All right, have a good day, guys. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
There's been an interesting issue with medical research on people that have taken tests for years. There have been several drugs created from, you know, somebody gets a tumor put out, that tumor's analyzed, they find something and make a drug, and the original person never gets any money from that. I've seen TV shows about that.
There's a woman in real life, there's a woman who is the mother of pretty much every drug that's ever come out. There's a black woman from the, I don't know, 50s, 60s, whatever it was. And they've been using her blood for decades to make and test drugs. And there are thousands of patents based on her blood that she gets not penny one from. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. My pie is up and running, and everything's working. But I decided to test the download and upload speed with Ookla speed test. I have the I think the third tier of spectrum right now, so I get something like 400 or 500 meg down and 20 up. When I do the test on the Pi, 20 up works fine, but the down is something like 100. Sometimes it's as low as 60 to 87 megabits per second. And I tried internet searches. I found a number of places where people experience the same problem, but no solution. Just wondering if you guys might have one.
Which Pi is this?
This is a Raspberry Pi 4 with
eight gig,
yes.
Okay. Are you talking wireless or wired?
Wired.
Okay. Okay, a couple of things. First, it depends on what else the Pi is doing. The speed tests, including Ookla, are not always accurate.
Okay.
And there are a couple of things you have to realize. You can select different servers at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be aware of a couple of things. First, every server will give you a different response.
Always.
Secondly,
and the same server will give you a different response a minute later.
Yeah, exactly right.
Or two servers in the same distant city.
Right.
Okay, I used to get what Dave just said. I used to get Syracuse. Now I'm getting University of Rochester.
U of R is good. So is RIT. I tend to prefer RIT simply because I spent 20 years there. But both of those are pretty fast. The other big thing you have to remember is time of day. You're on Spectrum, and Spectrum is a shared connection.
Uh-huh.
So if you're doing this at a time of day when lots of people are watching movies or are on video conferencing calls or playing games or, you know, whatever, the short answer is you'll get a very different number during the day than you will at 2 a.m.
Hmm. Okay, so I can switch over to the Mac. I have the Pi and the Mac side by side running, and the Mac will give me pretty much what I think I'm paying for. But if I turn right around and do it again a moment later on the Pi, it just dips into the tank in terms of the downloads.
Right, and the other thing you do have to remember is that the Pi, for all that it's pretty fast and pretty nice, is not a
This is not a gamer machine,
right?
And just to check something simple, you are using a gigabit capable Ethernet cord.
Yes,
with eight conductors.
Yes, I am.
Right, and you've got a gigabit switch and all the other.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I too find that my Pis do not give me the same speed as my desktop machine, and I've just kind of learned to accept that.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically, it boils down to the processing power of this little Pi.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Also, don't forget the software that you're running was really designed to run on an Intel processor. The browser and everything else that you're using, it was translated to the processor you're using, but it may not have been translated efficiently.
Okay.
So, for example, the JavaScript.
Right.
That you're running, et cetera, may not be. So, and it depends on how that all works, too. I also have a program in Python that is essentially the Ookla software, uses the same servers, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
And it is perennially much, much, maybe a tenth the speed of the web-based thing. And that's simply because Python is slow.
Yep.
So whatever translator's happening in the Pi is going to slow things down.
Okay. I can live with that. I just wanted to make certain that there wasn't some solution to this. But, you know, the Pi is what it is. I'm not going to argue. I went ahead and bought a second one. The first one I put together is doing what I want it to do now. So I've got a second one on the desk for mucking around.
There you go.
But
get a touch screen
when
for
you get
it.
To your fourth or fifth one, you can admit you have a problem.
I've only got three, so I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I got the answer that I thought I might get, but I wanted to make sure. So I can live with this. It's fine at this point. So I'll just continue to play with it and learn something new.
Have fun.
Excellent. Have fun. Okay.
Like I say, get a touch screen with the next one, Larry.
Oh, boy.
They're not that bad. A 7-inch touchscreen. It's a lot of fun.
Depends on what you're using it for. If it's just doing something in the background. I actually use mine through the remote desktop protocol so that they sit in another room, as a matter of fact. Yep. And I just bring them up on my desktop. Okay. Anyway, thanks, Larry.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye. I just run through them and one of them's doing folding at home to help search for COVID fixes and things like that. And used to be SETI at home, but they've stopped.
They had too much data to process in several lifetimes.
Yeah, right.
And then the antenna collapsed.
Right.
That was so sad. Although I was glad to hear that they're going to rebuild it.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Okay. Hi, gentlemen. I have two questions, one about Macs and one about PCs.
Okay.
The first question regarding the Mac M1, hooking up two monitors for it. I understand that you can hook up one monitor directly to the HDMI port, but a second monitor can be hooked up to either USB-C or Thunderbolt with an adapter. Is there a preferred way to do that?
Well, it depends on which computer you have as to how many monitors it can support.
Mac Mini M1.
All right, yeah, the Mac Mini, yeah. You can do one on each port. On the Macs that only have two of the Thunderbolt 3 ports, it can only drive one monitor. On the Macs that have four ports, you can drive one on each side. It's basically one monitor per controller chip, basically. We're just going through this for a customer that has a Mini DisplayPort, and finding an HDMI to Mini DisplayPort was tricky.
Yeah, bet.
HDMI to HDMI is easy. So if you have an HDI monitor, that's probably the easiest way to do it. And then USB to HDMI is pretty easy as well.
Yeah, let me cut in for a second, Steve. I understand that I have two HDMI monitors. The first one I know I can correct directly HDMI to HDMI. What I've been reading is that for the second monitor, you can either use an adapter for USB-C to HDMI or Thunderbolt to HDMI. Is one or the other preferred?
Theoretically, Thunderbolt would be faster. If you're going to drive a 4K or a 6K monitor, you probably have to use Thunderbolt. But if it's just an HD or even a 2K monitor, then probably USB-C is fine.
One you can more easily and cheaply find a connector for.
Yeah, and the USB one will be cheaper than the Thunderbolt one, yeah. Okay. I did see an interesting video when we were researching this, a company that makes a USB breakout box that can drive six monitors off one M1 Mac. So basically the box is handling the video controller and then only passing the data back into the computer over one port.
In fact, either one would be fine. Now, what's your PC question?
Okay, PC question. Like Larry, I've accumulated a bunch of equipment. I have some fairly high-end PCs, i5 SSD, i7 SSD, 27-inch monitors, a bunch of really good printers that I don't need anymore, and I'd like to find new homes for. I don't want to sell them. I'd like to find new homes where people can put them to use. Any suggestions?
Have you checked with the local schools?
I have not checked with local schools, no.
Yeah, check with your you could call. You're in, what, Pittsford?
Mm-hmm.
Call the school district there, or call the district office, and tell them you got all this equipment. Quite often, sometimes they're looking for kids that don't have the computers right now with distance learning and all that they could put it to really good use.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that might even be more appropriate for city schools.
Could be.
It would
yeah.
be very much.
There you go.
We used to have a list of places that did that, but that's long.
Yeah,
long,
that's long.
U of R has a list of organizations that will accept computer donations as part of our ongoing community services efforts.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I can post.
But that's a good one too, though. Check with the school district.
Oh, TechSoup. I've heard of them. TechSoup is a national nonprofit company that works with a lot of schools for getting discounted hardware and software. But if you want to donate something locally, then you're probably probably good through them too.
On the other hand, like, Joe, before you do any donation, make sure that you have removed and scrubbed
all your
personal data off of those drives.
Yeah, all these, you know, this is good stuff. It's all been wiped clean, so it's all secure. And I'd just like to find new homes for it because it's really, was fairly expensive stuff. Still, SSDs, i5, i7 processors, somebody can put this stuff to use.
Perfect.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I remember we used to do a couple of the tech schools, the technical high schools in town were accepting computers to help teach their kids troubleshooting and repair.
Right. So good. It's good that you have that list.
Yeah, I'll post that list, yeah.
I could use it myself. We were talking just the other day in the Ask Nick video chat that I've got some old machines. I've since discovered that some of them are so old, you cannot do USB boot through them. So I'm a little confused as to how I'm going to get any sort of other operating system on them.
Yep.
But
floppy.
Yeah, like I said.
Yeah. I was just setting up a new computer yesterday, and it kept trying to boot off the USB backup drive. And so I'm going into the BIOS trying to find where the heck do I set the drive order.
Right.
Because I kept getting an operating system missing error. Well, stop booting off the external USB drive. How about the internal SATA drive like you're normally supposed to boot?
Yeah, right. I'm surprised it didn't fail over. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Gates, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Well, not too much. How about you guys?
Much the same.
Not good. This should be a quickie for you.
Ooh.
A couple weeks ago, we were talking about the site with end of date for, especially for Chromebook.
Oh, yeah.
You put it up there, Steve, and I can't find it. The link. But what was the address for that URL?
I don't know. Let's.
I have it. Hold on. I'm just.
Do a search for Chromebook and nothing. Oh, because I spelled Chromebook wrong.
That'll do it every time.
Yeah,
well,
sometimes.
That's interesting.
Sometimes there's so many links that it takes a while to find the back one. Check when your Chromebook updates will stop. February 15th, 2020. So I just did a search for Chromebook.
Okay.
There it is. The auto update policy is what you're searching for. And Steve, here's
how'd you Google it? Chromebook auto update policy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's on the
he's putting another link up there now.
Yeah, he's gonna put the link up for that as soon as he finds it.
Yep.
All right, great.
The big thing is knowing which version yours is, because they name them. You know, Toshiba has three different Chromebook 2s.
Yeah.
2.1, 2.2, 2.3.
Yeah. One thing you can do is there is a program called COGS. COGS? I think it's called COGS. Hold on. COG. Yeah, COG, COG, the System Info Viewer, and it gives you lots of information about your system, and it doesn't tell you when the end of life is. On the other hand, hold on, the About Chrome OS Advanced. Somewhere there's a thing that tells you all of this.
Yeah.
And I just have to find an additional detail. Oh, hold on.
Yeah, the Chromebook.
There it is. If you go down to the lower right where the time is,
Yeah.
And you select the gear.
Fan.
The gear. What? Yeah, the fan, the gear. And then select About Chrome OS. And then under that, you select Additional Details. One of the things, the second thing, first it tells you what channel you're on. And the second thing is the update schedule. And for example, mine says, this device will get automatic software and security updates until June 2026.
All right, this is advanced.
Yeah, under About Chrome OS.
About Chrome OS, all right, there, down there, yeah.
And then
what new get help?
Additional details.
There we go, down there, yeah.
And the second thing down is update schedule.
Update schedule, all right. Now open it. It won't open.
Well, it should say right there at update schedule, this device will get automatic software and security updates.
Until June 2025, right, that works.
There you go.
Okay. Now, then my next question, is there a similar thing for a Samsung?
A Samsung Chromebook?
Yeah.
All Chromebooks do this.
All Chromebooks do this.
All the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Linda next door is looking to buy a new laptop. And so she's sitting here playing with my Chromebook.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
We're listening to the show and trying to figure out how to make things work.
Yep.
So she's looking at that. So far, she's kind of happy with the one she's looking at.
And on the new link I posted now, it goes through a list of all the different Chromebooks from all the different manufacturers they know.
Oh, okay. All right. Great.
Yeah. And on that one page, don't change your channel. Stay on stable, trust me.
Yeah. Now, the next question is BJ's or Best Buy? And now, I know you're not going to recommend anything, but can you say anything towards that?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. I know
BJ's or Best Buy?
Yeah.
It's basically just like any other store. You might have a club warehouse discount at one of the warehouse stores, but check their prices against the other company. You never know who's going to have a sale on what week.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Well, you're careful buyer stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
In terms of support, I would suspect to just say they're equal.
Yeah, because they're all going to send it off to some place to get it fixed.
Yeah, right. They don't do in-house stuff anymore.
Mm-mm.
And I don't know any local...
They're so cheap that, if anything, if it's a software problem, then it can probably be fixed by reinstalling your OS.
Right.
If it's a hardware problem, it's so cheap, you buy a new one.
Right.
Okay. You hear that music. It's time to go.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have fun. All right. That's it. We're done for the first hour. But don't go away. We've got a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites coming your way right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back with more of Dave Enright, more of Steve Ray, and more of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more of you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, and we will take your questions as they come in. So take a slightly longer break. I know we will, but then come on back for a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And we have Dave from Brighton, New York on the line. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Terrific. Say, on my Pixel phone, I no longer have my bookmarks in Chrome.
Really?
If I push the three little dots, I get some selections. I get star bookmarks, and it says all, but that's not my folders and such.
Did you accidentally log into someone else's Google account?
I don't think so.
Huh. I'm just looking at mine right now to see what I find. Yeah. Bookmarks. Well, how interesting. My last two bookmarks here got to be 40 years old.
It's just a hint to tell you to...
Ah, okay. All right. When I opened up the bookmarks, I was in automatically a section called Mobile Bookmarks. I then hit the left arrow at the top left, and I see three sets of bookmarks. Mobile Bookmarks, which has two, the two I saw. Bookmarks Bar, which has 7,723 bookmarks. And Other Bookmarks, which has another 4,338 bookmarks.
I like the fact that it counts them for you.
Yeah.
Okay, now, where did you find this left arrow?
At the top left.
On my phone, I see a home kind of a thing page. I see this.
Okay, hold on. Stop. In the upper right of your browser is the three dots.
Got it.
I clicked that. Then I chose bookmarks.
Okay.
And then I saw in the upper left a left arrow, which took me out of the bookmarks I was in and showed me three folders with all my bookmarks in them.
And on mine, at least, it also shows you what Google account you're logged in as and lets you change accounts.
Well, I see my face. It's not pretty, but I see my face on Google. But I'm not lucky. If I hit the arrow, I just get a bunch of things, but I'm just not seeing my bookmarks. There is something say star bookmarks, and in blue it says all, and I have no idea what that means. I think it's bookmarking whatever I have, but
I don't.
And it's still like
I
in my.
I do not know where you are. So if
my
you,
Apple, it, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Apple.
I said, am I Apple? My iPad. My bookmarks are there. They're on my desktop. They're on my laptop. Just not on my phone anymore.
All right. So, again, if you go into your Chrome browser.
I'm in my Chrome browser.
And then you see the three dots in the upper right.
Three dots. Got it.
Click that. One of the choices is bookmarks with a star next to it.
Mm-hmm.
You hit that. And what do you see?
I see a left arrow and says edit bookmark. Now there's the left arrow. I'll give that a shot.
It should show you your mobile bookmarks that are set now. And the left arrow should let you choose different bookmark folders.
You do not see in the upper right corner the word bookmarks. After you select the bookmarks menu choice.
Okay, I hit my three little bars. I've got my menu. It says star bookmarks. I tap that, and it takes me back to a Google search that I did before.
Right, and in the upper left should be an arrow.
On the upper left is the symbol for the home page. The lower left is an arrow. I'll give that a try. Okay. And that just takes me back to the Google homepage.
Without
what version of Android are you running?
The latest one. I mean, I just did an update this morning to make sure that I was current, and it seemed to do an update. I don't know whether to get hung up or not. Now, it's a Google 3A, and I may have too many things on, books on the Android app. You know, the books, the Audibles, there may be too many Audibles, so maybe I need...
That should have nothing to do with bookmarks in Chrome.
Should have nothing to do with that. I honestly have no idea where you are, and I apologize.
Okay.
Where you are does not sound like where I am, and so I don't know how you got to where you are. You should see a list of bookmarks, or it should say no bookmarks. But how you got to where you are, without seeing in the upper right corner that it should say across the top, mobile bookmarks, or bookmarks bar, or other bookmarks, and there should be a left arrow next to that.
I've got an arrow that's pointing to the right. I've got a circle with information, and I got a little circle thing that, you know, to refresh.
No, you're still in the browser window. You're not in the bookmarks window.
You're not in the bookmarks window at all.
Yeah, and the only thing I got, so if I hit bookmarks with a star, it goes me to edit bookmarks, and I hit the arrow, and it takes me back to the browser.
Right. So under edit bookmarks, you see nothing else?
I see new tab, mobile bookmarks folder.
Okay, so if you
Chrome native.
And if you see the mobile bookmarks folder, does it give a number under that?
Oh, here's something. All right. There we go, bookmarks bar. All right. So it says edit bookmarks bar. And no, it's just not coming. It's just not coming the way it did before. So could something be corrupt, or is when I tried to, you know, Google it, it said something about the bookmarks being file being corrupted and needing to be renamed, but that sounded like it was more for the desktop.
That's much more for the desktop, although it's certainly possible. It may be that your bookmarks are simply not syncing.
That's why I had a choice to choose what account to log in. But now that I've logged in on my Chrome on mobile, it sounds exactly like what you're describing on your phone on mobile. I did post a link on our website from Google on how to create, view, and edit your bookmarks.
Okay, I'll look at that. But no, it says I went into settings and it says the sync in Google services sync is on. So
okay,
and once again, it looks like I'm in my account.
Right. Steve's also going because it's not horribly complex, but it's certainly more complex than talking it through over the phone.
Yeah.
Another site that talks to you about where your Chrome bookmarks are not syncing on your Android phone. And it starts with relogging into your Google account, then making sure bookmarks are syncing, and then clearing the on-device cache, which could be a problem.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I appreciate your help taking up a lot of your time.
No, that's fine. And I suspect that at least one of those things will fix your problem.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's sadly when we can't really see what's going on.
I haven't looked at my Chrome bookmarks in forever either, because some of mine are really old.
Yeah. I have bookmarks in there that are from... a system that hasn't existed since.
And websites that don't exist anymore.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob, what's up?
Good afternoon. Henrietta, otherwise known as a green light, no way zone. I would like to suggest that Greenlight better spend their money paying off the various town officials and so forth to get the service to residents rather than spending all that money at the airport. Who the heck on a wireless connection is going to use 500 feet anyway?
Well, the whole airport gets the 500 gig, and then everyone shares between it.
Right. So it's shared. And it's designed, as I said, it's designed more to
promote people to
promote
come.
Rochester.
Yeah. As a high tech, we're trying to, you know, they're trying to come across as a high tech company that Greenlight is here. And if you bring your business here, you know, and you do internet service, you're going to be able to tap into it.
But Bob, you're also assuming that this is a zero sum game. Greenlight is not a pie. For somebody to get some doesn't mean you get less. They're working on each area as they go, and there are a whole lot of behind-the-scenes issues that have to be dealt with.
Most of them involve paying off town officials.
Nobody's paying off town officials. Our town officials are all wonderful human beings and a credit to the whole freaking human race.
And some of it is competitors who live on that area, too, don't want them to dig the road up. I went to a customer who lived on a corner, and she was proud of the fact that she wouldn't let the cable company run a cable line through her yard because she didn't want her yard messed up. So no one on the street was able to get cable TV, cable internet, cable anything.
Right. And that is much more of a problem than anything.
And it's also a demand. There's got to be demand in that area.
Right.
Enough folks. Just because one or two folks want it, it's not cost effective for the company to come through there and put all that time and effort. That's what I was told, and that's why I had to wait.
Right.
According to what I saw on Greenlight's website last time I looked there, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% demand rate for the area where I live.
Right.
Which ought to be high enough.
No.
You would think so, but it is not.
95 to 98, I think.
95 to 98.
Yep. I had to get up to 95% for my neighborhood. And I'm on Empire Boulevard.
All right, look, hold on. Let's everybody stop. This is not a show to bitch about Greenlight. I'm sorry, we're here to answer computer questions. If you have a problem with Greenlight, then you need to talk to Greenlight. You don't talk to me. Pot them down. Let's go on to the next call. I'm sorry. We're not here for that. I get it. But if you want to, it's the same thing as complaining about some computer store. We're not here for that. It's not what we do. And I'm not interested in it. There are a whole lot of issues that you don't understand. It's a whole lot of issues I don't understand. And I'm sure that you have to make a choice. You can either decide that everybody hates you or they're trying to get the thing done and they'll do it as fast as they can. I prefer the latter. That's where we're going to leave it.
Let's have we can have bigger pies and we can have more pies. It's
right.
We want everyone gets their own piece.
Right. All right. I apologize. That was rude of me. And I'm human and it happens. Our next caller, I believe, is Will. Will, where are you calling from?
In PA.
Nick, Three Musketeers, Hampton, PA.
Hampton, PA.
Hampton, PA. What's up?
Not too much. What's up with you guys?
Nothing. Thanks for calling.
Hey, listen, thanks to you guys, and I want to say thank the Lord, too, for sound bites, because I finally installed my Toshiba SSD on my Toshiba satellite.
Nice.
And more importantly, I finally downloaded Ubuntu, and it's just a liberating experience from Windows.
Isn't it though?
Yes. Now, mind you, there are the few little idiosyncrasies that I'm dealing with, like learning my way around the file manager and the different shortcut keys, but otherwise, LibreOffice and Ubuntu, it's just the real deal.
It is the real deal, and you're right. We've been saying this for decades. Starting a new operating system is like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. And mm-hmm. So you spend a few days figuring out where the radio is, and then it's like you've been driving this thing forever.
Now, the only real issue that I have at this point is using HDMI. And I'm using a Vizio 370 37-inch. And the Toshiba, it's recognizing the monitor. But the issue that I'm having is that when I plug it in, the image is vibrating or sketchy. Like I said, the laptop is recognizing the monitor, but the image is wobbling, and I can't seem to get it to stabilize.
That sounds like a frequency issue. Is it like at 50 hertz instead of 60 hertz?
Yeah. One of the things is when you go into the monitor settings, where you can set how wide the screen is, you can mm-hmm. also pick a frequency, 50, 60, 70, 72, whatever the number is. And you need to match that number to the number in the monitor that the in the monitor manual. If you have the manual, if you don't have the manual, you're going to have to look it up online by the type.
Yeah, I can. I think I found it the other day online somewhere. I can't remember.
Yeah, but that I do that all the time. I find something, I forget to bookmark it, and then I have to search through my history.
Well, now you got 7,000 bookmarks to search through, so that doesn't help either.
Boy, ain't that the truth? I have it on my list, my to-do list. I have clean up my bookmarks, and it is way at the bottom, and I will never get to it. But yeah, so that's generally the reason that the image is vibrating. Of course, it could be a bad monitor, but that is less likely.
Loose cable.
Could be a loose cable too.
Okay, I'll check that too. I think I did read somewhere that if your HDMI cable is not properly plugged in, that could cause problems.
Yep.
There's also sometimes it's too cheap a cable. There's not enough shielding on it. But then on the other side, there can be too heavy a cable, and the weight of the cable pulls it out of the socket.
Now, if you've got it on a satellite, does the internal video work? The video to the screen in the laptop?
Okay. The video to the laptop, that seems okay.
Yeah, so it is likely either the frequency, like we said, mm-hmm. or the cable, and a very distant third would be a problem with the monitor itself.
Or there could be just a simple short in that cable, too. You know, if you turn, if you move it around while they're both firmly connected, see if you get any flickering. You know, if you get it, quite often if it's bent, you know, going up or down to the computer, from the computer to the monitor, sometimes they can get pinch points and everything else. And a bad internal wire might be frayed enough that it's causing.
Also, it could be an issue with the connector. So yep. If you have multiple connectors, if you have multiple HDMI connectors on the monitor, try a different one.
Yep.
Well, in fact, this has been the only connector that I've used. And when I was using Windows before, I hadn't experienced this problem. I'm thinking it might be a frequency issue, like you said.
There you go.
See, you've done the troubleshooting. Well done, Will. So check the frequency and see if you can fix it that way. Match it to the frequency in the manual, and you should be on your way.
Yeah. Okay, fellas. Appreciate you.
Yep, Burr. Thank you. Have fun down there. That's two calls from Pennsylvania today. Very nice. We like to hear that.
I wonder if they knew each other.
I don't know. How close are Pottstown and Hampton? I don't know. But you guys down in Pennsylvania, you guys have to spread the word. Let's get more calls from Pennsylvania. And if you know folks over the line in other states, you can try that as well. All right. Back to the phones and back to New York State. And we'll go to Tom here in Brighton. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. So I'm calling for a friend of mine who actually lives in Colorado. And really my question, I guess, is for Steve because it concerns an iMac. And it's a 2013 model. And he's complaining that it's running kind of slow these days. He says he's cleaned it up and it's still running slow. And I don't know, as I say, it's a 2013. He mentions it's running High Sierra. I believe the latest operating system is Mojave. Am I correct about that?
No, there were two others past that. The danger is moving to Catalina or the latest, which is Big Sur, will sometimes make the old machines run even slower because it's like the new OS assumes you have a new computer. One of the things I have seen frequently help, and I've done it on my 2012 computer a few times, back up your computer and then back it up again. erase the computer
to a different place.
Erase the computer and install a clean OS, and then restore your documents. Don't restore any applications. Reinstall the applications you just need to use now, because a lot of times things can get cluttered up with apps you used to use but don't anymore. Did you say it was a 21 inch or 27 inch?
It's a 21.
Unfortunately, with a 21 inch, the RAM cards are sealed inside, so it's tricky to upgrade the RAM. Normally, adding more RAM, it might have 4 gigs. You may have 8 in a 23.
It has eight.
Yeah, you could go to 16 gigs would help. You could replace the spinning drive with a solid state drive. That would help.
That's what I suggested to him, is that he replace the SSD. Replace the spinning drive with
SSD. The annoying thing about those models is that they're glued together. Steve Jobs hated screws, and they still glue their computers together. I have seen some third-party kits for cutting the glue and removing the display. And then once you get the display off, it's just a regular computer you replace parts with. But getting that display off is tricky, and if you cut it wrong, you can crack the glass or crack the LCD. You might want to find a vendor that can do it for him. But it's generally not cheap because it's time-consuming. There's a lot of labor involved.
He did contact a store, not the official Apple store.
They wouldn't upgrade it because they don't go inside old machines like that. Unless there's a hardware fault, and then they'll replace it with the same part.
Yeah, they said they'd upgrade the memory to 16 gig for about $150, which sounded reasonable.
That sounds like just the RAM price, not the labor to install it.
That could be, yeah. Well, that's.
And he may not have told them what model it was, too. So the 27-inch has a door on the back, and so most places, including ours, we do free installation there. But on
because it takes 2 minutes.
Yeah, on the 27, the 21-inch, you have to cut it apart.
So it may be that the best route for him is to actually buy a new computer.
And maybe sell the 2013 and recoup some of the value and getting the new one. Just don't install the GUI and run BSD.
There you go.
It's 7 or 8 years old now, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'd like to get.
All right, we got to take a break.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave. Where am I? Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You as we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, I just want to remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be. No, should we do it tomorrow night? It's Valentine's.
I
made reservations earlier.
Okay, then.
We should be done by 9.
All right. Should we do it?
Yeah.
No. All right. No video chat tomorrow.
I was
going to
say the wives probably a lot happier.
Spouses.
Yep. Spouses. Your significant other.
Right. All right, so we will not have a video chat tomorrow night. But for those of you who do like the video chats, we meet every other, all the other Sundays at 9 p.m. You can go to soundbites.org/lounge, LOUNGE. And at Sunday night at 9 p.m., there will be a link to the video chat there. Through the courtesy of the folks at Mastermind Lounge. We've been given a lounge there, and we'll be there from 9 to 10 o'clock every Sunday night except tomorrow. And you can join us and ask questions and and chit-chat, and we'll be there for the entire hour doing that. Please read the entire page to see how to manage what goes on in the chat itself before you join. But we do that every Sunday. And those of you who are members of Ask Nick, we also do that on Wednesday nights at a different link. But you do have to be a member of Ask Nick before I'll let you in to the chat. So, but again, we're not doing it tomorrow night because it is
Valentine's
Day. But we're going to go back to the phones right now and talk to Dave from Penfield, New York. Hi, Dave. What's up?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm thinking of installing a SSD module in my Windows desktop and then copying the whole Windows environment over from the SATA to the SSD. So my question is, for performing the cloning operation, is a free program like Clonezilla or Macrium going to be okay, or do I need to go to a paid product?
Yeah.
The reputable ones like Clonezilla and Macrium are probably okay. We're never too sure about the fly-by-night companies. Yeah. Who knows what they're doing with your data.
Right. So if you go to asknick.com/backup.php.
All right.
Yeah. You'll see a list of them there. And Clonezilla is free. But as we talked about in the Ask Nick chat on Wednesday night, Macrium Reflect seemed, a couple of people said it was, one person said it was much easier for them to use than Clonezilla. And there is a free version. It doesn't do everything, but it did what they needed it to do. So read the features carefully before you decide to use that one.
I've also seen some of the drives come with their own cloning software.
This is going to be just a one-use shot here. So.
Right. The other thing you need to think about is why, if your system is running slowly,
right,
then a large part of that could be that you've just got too much stuff in the
registry.
If it was me, I'd want to, sorry to interrupt you.
No,
but if I was doing this, and like you say, you're doing it for performance. So to do the most optimum, what you want to do is format, put it in as its own drive and install Windows fresh and clean. And then reinstall first Revo Uninstaller, then your adware and your virus programs and the spyware programs and that before you do anything else. Okay?
Okay.
And then that way you can then start adding the programs as you need them, trying to keep the system as clean and running as efficient as it can. And Revo Uninstaller is the one that I always recommend as far as getting rid of it. Do not use the Windows Uninstaller.
All right, I always use Revo.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And, again, you're going to get better performance and everything else because even though you're cloning it over, if it's bulky and, some things that haven't been cleaned up and all that, since it is a faster drive, take advantage of it and have everything fresh to start with.
Okay. What's the thinking right now on registry cleaners? I've read a lot of articles that advise against that.
Revo Uninstaller is the
does
thing
that.
You should use.
Yeah, that does it.
And it is an uninstaller, and that rather than a general cleanup program.
Yeah.
And again, as Dave said, if you put it in first, it watches everything that gets put in.
Right.
It sees what's been added.
And the usual reason the registry gets corrupted and filled with cruft is from bad uninstallers.
Yep.
Right.
Well, I've been pretty good about always using Revo, but I ran a check in CC Cleaner, and there was a lot of junk there.
Yeah, there will be if there's ever a point at which you installed and uninstalled something without Revo uninstalled.
Are you using the free version or the paid?
Free.
If you're going to use it for the 19, I think they still have the special going on. You can get it for like 2 year subscription for like $20, And the pro version is fantastic. I highly recommend it. They're not paying me anything to do it or that. I've gone personally. I've got it on three different machines. And, you know, signed up for a subscription on all three.
Right.
And it's well worth it. It does a fantastic job.
Okay. Well, I'll take all this into consideration, then. That's good. I was wondering, do you have enough time for a Linux question?
Sure, go ahead.
I've made myself a Linux bootable environment on a external hard drive, and this is my first real Linux experience.
Sure.
So everything works fine. It boots up fine, if etc. But I installed Wine. And then I installed a Windows program that I would want to still be able to use. And there was a problem. So I said, okay, I'm going to start over again. And I removed the Windows program, and I removed Wine. But then it didn't seem to take very long to do that. It just said, okay, you're done. And when I looked in the directories, all the programs were still there. There were still icons in the menus and stuff.
How did you remove Wine?
I clicked on a little button that said remove.
Oh yeah, no. What? Okay. are you using Ubuntu? Did you say?
Mint Cinnamon.
Cinnamon. Okay. The better way to do that is to use the purge command, and probably from the command line is the best way to do that. I don't remember. Programs on Mint.
I can look it up. That's okay.
Yeah, I don't remember if it's Yum or it's. I don't remember if it's Yum or it's apt or it's which one it is, but I think it's apt. So you would say sudo apt purge Wine.
Okay.
And that removes the program, all the folders, all the everything. And it actually purges everything right out of the system.
Okay. That's fine.
There you go.
That's great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the help.
Sure. Bye-bye. Yeah. It's a set of... One of the few things that makes learning another operating system a little harder is that you have to learn a whole new set of commands.
Yep.
And when to use what and how to do what and blah, 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 blah. And some things are just easier and faster from the command line. But I know that many Windows people and many Mac people never use the command line and don't know how convenient or fast it can be to do things. I've learned to do a lot of things on the command line. But then again, I started with DOS, so command line was pretty simple for me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Peter down in Nashville, Tennessee. How are things down there?
Cold.
Cold. 60, 70 Crimea River.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the temperature there right now?
Right now it is 32.
Wow, it is cold down there.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, even in where I came from, Texas, they had like 9 degrees.
Right.
So, you know, and they had that accident in Fort Worth that was related.
Right, yeah, that was pretty horrible.
You know, when it snows there or it gets cold there, people really...
Yeah, freak out.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll give you a pass this time, Peter.
So what's your question, sir?
Well, I called because I was standing by listening, and I was content to listen, but that person called about the slow iMac.
Yeah.
And I'm on, like, my 7th iMac. I like iMacs because of what I do. But anyway, I always would get the iMac, take the display off, and do a solid-state drive upgrade automatically. And I would hear about people that, instead of doing that, they would just attach a solid-state drive to the back using a enclosure. Well, I always thought that would be too slow or just another hiccup. And so this last iMac, I've had it about a year, And I had intended to put this solid-state drive in it, but to get it up and running quickly, I put it in an external case, a USB 3 case, put it on the back of the drive through USB, used it as my startup disk, and this thing runs so good that I'm not even going to put one inside.
Yeah, sure. I didn't think of that. Yeah, usually the USB, the slow USB interface overwhelms the fast SSD, and it doesn't buy you much of anything. But
USB 3
is
fast.
Yeah.
That's the key. The enclosure has to be USB 3, and of course, it's a solid state drive.
Right.
But man, I really, really, people would ask me, and I always tell them, no, you got to put a solid state drive inside, not on the outside, because of the slowdown. But USB 3 is just so fast.
Technically, internal SATA bus is still faster, but the USB 3 is probably fast enough.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed the difference on my Pi when hook it. You know, I've got an external hard drive on it, the SSD hard drive. And when I had it hooked up to the regular USB 2, minute I hooked it up to the 3, I'm moving files around. It's like, boom. Boom, yep. Boom, done.
Now, Tom in Brighton, who has that iMac, it's 2013, so.
Mine is a 2013.
Oh, and it does have a USB 3.
Yeah, that's when they went to, actually 2012s, too.
Yeah, okay. I would have said that was right on that edge, so you know, make sure you've got a USB 3 before you do it, but. That's good news. That's good information, Peter.
Thunderbolt would be faster, but Thunderbolt drives are a lot more expensive.
Yeah, much.
Yeah, and a nice thing about the iMac, it has 4 USB ports in the back. So, and you usually your wireless keyboard and wireless mouse, so you're not really losing much. Well, I've got a hub, too, so.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there, guys, and enjoying the show. I got a plug for you on my Facebook page. I really appreciate you guys are around. But one thing I will say on the YouTube broadcast.
Yeah.
When they do that great jazz interlude.
Yeah.
You guys should have like instruments and play along.
Air guitar.
I can see Steve on drums. Yeah.
Air bass.
Yeah.
Dave with a sax. Stand up bass.
There you go.
I should actually block the cameras out because we do rude things during the break.
Yeah, you get.
Don't tell everybody. They might not notice.
Heaven forbid if you can read lips.
Yeah, right.
All right, guys. Try to stay safe. Stay warm.
Yep. Take
you
care.
You too. Good luck down there. Have fun. Yeah. I put a USB 3 on my Pi as well. And I had it on my desktop. USB 3 is fast, 600 some odd megabits per second or whatever it is.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And that's fast enough. It's not, obviously, like you said, it's not as fast as direct SATA connection, not as fast as Thunderbird, but it's fast enough.
And especially because a lot of those old Macs had 5,400 RPM hard drives in them.
Right, it flies, right.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
What's up?
You guys. I wanted to say that, yes, Revo is a very awesome program.
Thank you.
Awesome. Another one, I know I mentioned it to you before, is called IOBIT Uninstaller. And I don't know how this program does it, but if you install it, like say you've had your computer for a while, all of a sudden it comes up with all these wrong entries for programs that had been uninstalled already.
Nice.
And it takes them away for you automatically if you tell it to. And it also does monitor what you put in.
Right.
It gives you a screen. It comes up and says, this program has been installed to this location. And then it remembers it. And if you happen to forget to use it and you use Windows, it still takes you to, it automatically launches the program and says, these are the shortcuts that need to go, you know, your registry entries and all that stuff.
Nice.
So, and it has a powerful uninstall for things that are stubborn.
That's very nice.
So I just wanted to put that out there as another alternative that is really awesome.
All right. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Yeah. There are a number of uninstallers. Revo is very good. IoBit is very good. The important thing is to have an uninstaller.
Yeah.
Because like we said, one of the big issues with Windows is that it never removes anything from the registry. All it does is block out that section, say the section no longer is useful, but it's still there. So you can, I have seen registries that were 2 gigabytes in size. Well, no wonder Windows took so long to boot up.
And then they wonder why their machines are slow.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you can remove all that stuff from the registry, it gets leaner and meaner and faster and nicer and blah, 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 blah. And that's a good thing, particularly for Windows. So if you've got your machine, if you never add or remove anything from your machine, this is not something you have to worry about. But if you're any, if you've added anything or removed anything from your machine,
let's say who's that?
Yeah, exactly right. Then you really need an uninstaller. Revo, IoBit. There are several that are very good. All right, that's it for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. We had an awful lot of calls lined up this week, and we got to everyone we could. I apologize to the texting people. Texts are not something we interrupt the phone calls for, so we didn't get to a number of those as well, and I apologize. But I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And we will be back next week. We will see you in just 166 hours. Please be good to each other.